ABC Radio Canberra.
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 On ABC Radio Canberra, this is Laura Chilingirian.
Now, an odd assortment of items are revealing a glimpse into the world of those confined at one of Australia's oldest psychiatric wards. But how the items, aprons and old newspapers, made their way from Tasmania to Canberra is just as intriguing as the items themselves. Well, those responsible for bringing the items here and who now have the task of studying the items for clues join me in the studio. Dr. Tracy Ireland is Associate Professor of Cultural Heritage at the University of Canberra, and Danica Auld is an honours student at UC as well. Good afternoon. Thank you for coming in.
Hi, Laura. Thank you for having us.
Tell me a little about these items and where they've come from.
Well, they came from underneath the veranda of a building that's part of the new Norfolk Derwent Hospital or Willow Court Psychiatric Institution, which is, as you said, Australia's oldest continuously operating psychiatric institution, which started in 1826. The first patients there were convicts and went through right up until 2000 and has only recently, really quite recently, been decommissioned. So within this institution, which has some fantastic old buildings, a very atmospheric site, there's a lovely cottage called the Ladies' Cottage with a big veranda around it. And this cottage was where the women whose family could pay for them to be kept in that part of the asylum were housed. And these intriguing textile items came from underneath the veranda. So they'd been deliberately secreted underneath the veranda, and there are thousands of them. So it looks like an activity that happened over many years.
Right. Okay. So, Danica, what piqued your interest in looking into this?
Well, I've always been interested in textiles conservation, and it's a very unusual collection because a lot of the really interesting items have been embroidered in a very odd fashion. There's a lot of strange words and motifs that indicate that it was a patient that embroidered all of these, possibly as part of their therapy and part of their self-expression, really. So I was just interested in learning a bit more, researching, seeing what kind of influences the patients had, and seeing how these items really came to be.
So can we date them? Do they date as far back as 1826?
No, they're not that old. We can date them quite closely, but there's items in the collection that date back as far as about 1890s, right up until the early 1940s, and the activity seems to have stopped somewhere with the embroidered aprons around that time. So this is probably the work of, we think, maybe one woman.
Right, because, all of it.
Well, at least the embroidery, because Danica looked very closely at the style of the embroidery.
Stitches looked very very similar, like they were by the same hand. Even some of the motifs were repeated. They looked quite pretty much the same. Mm. A lot of the motifs, particularly the teapots, looked very similar, and all of the letters looked like they were the same kind of writing.
Well, talk me through some of the items themselves.
Well, the ones I looked closely at were these embroidered aprons looked like they were made from a standard kind of design, but they were always made out of different fabrics, slightly different construction methods. Some of them would have little ties and pockets, or made of patterned fabrics, others from more plain fabrics. And you see all different kinds of stitches on them. The construction looks like it's quite skilled, actually, possibly done by quite a skilled seamstress. And then later on, you see this really erratic, odd embroidery, and that seems like it was done by someone completely different. So you kind of see different stages in the life of this probably utilitarian apron suddenly becomes almost like an artwork.
And Tracy, as you mentioned, they look like they're from the 1890s right through to the 1940s. If you believe it's the same person, that's over a 50-year period. That's a really long time.
It's a really long time. I mean, we actually have one apron that had a bundled-up newspaper in the pocket of it when we found it, and it was, I think, 1931. The newspaper was 1931.
Helps date it immediately, doesn't it?
Yes, yes. There's lots of newspapers and sweet wrappers and chocolate wrappers. And, you know, the stashing away under the veranda was obviously part of an individual's you know, ritual or something that she felt compelled to do. And, you know, we've just submitted a paper to an international journal on this research that Danica has conducted. And we make the suggestion that this was an important way that she could mark her existence. You know, these women had no other way of expressing themselves. You know, their voice is not heard in the historical record. They're silent. And I think that's why we find, Danica and I find the aprons so touching and emotional. You know, when we touch the apron, we can feel the hand of this woman who stayed in the mental asylum for such a long time. And this was her only outlet. Tell us, Danica, about some of the little motifs and what they tell us about her life.
Well, there's a lot of interesting motifs because you see a couple of connections to national, international affairs, local affairs. We see some Tasmanian companies that are there, mm-hmm. such as the Union Bank started in Tasmania. Then you see references to Gallipoli and possibly this US senator who was in the newspapers about an issue about wool. And seeing these kind of things, you think maybe this lady was seeing things in newspapers, which were obviously in the hospital, and being influenced by letters and newspapers and all of these current affairs. So it wasn't such a closed-off environment. She was actually able to interact with some of those news topics and also some of the brands that she was exposed to every day.
Yeah, it's very reflective of what she was exposed to. That's really interesting. Yeah. You're listening to ABC Radio Canberra Drive. Laura Chilingirian here with you. And I'm having a chat with Danica Auld, who's an honours student at the University of Canberra, and Dr. Tracy Ireland, Associate Professor of Cultural Heritage at the University of Canberra, about these interesting items that have been that they've been looking through that were found at one of Australia's oldest psychiatric wards. Would they have been? When were these items discovered underneath the building?
Yes, well, they were discovered in 2013.
Right.
By the owners of the building. And the way we discovered them was because an archaeological team from Flinders University was down working with the owners of the building and the Derwent Valley Council, who supported the excavation on the site. And they sent out on Twitter some pictures of these aprons that they'd found, saying, you know, look at this, aren't they intriguing? And I saw them on Twitter and thought, wow, I would really love to look at those in the flesh and learn more about them. And also I knew that at that time, this was at the beginning of 2017, that Danica was just about to do her honours topic. And I've been Danica's research mentor since she started at the University of Canberra, and I knew that she wanted to do research on textiles.
Right.
I contacted the archaeologists at Flinders and said, have I got the student for you to really shed some light on these intriguing items?
So obviously, Danica, it's all about bringing them here to take a really close look at them. I understand that was an interesting process. How did you get them here?
Well, logistically, we had to pack them all up. So, you know, using archival materials just to get them safely to Canberra. So we had to make a selection out of the huge collection that's there because we had to get the thousands of objects, kind of decide what would be relevant or make an interesting project. And so we packed those all up with a bit of acid-free tissue, popped them in bags, and then we popped them into our suitcases and brought them back here.
And is it easy to preserve them? Is it a difficult process to preserve these items?
Well, conservation can be quite a time-consuming, laborious process because obviously you have to do a bit of research on the significance and the context of these items before you can make an informed decision, including the physical form of the object. So you have to consider a lot of factors. So a massive collection that has thousands of objects is going to require a lot longer than a year and one person to do. So I had to focus on a couple of objects to analyse in great detail, and then I did a bit of vacuum cleaning on the rest of the collection that I brought here.
Right.
Had to do a freezing of the collection just to make sure all the pests were dead. Mm-hmm. There was no more insect activity because there were a couple of clothes moths and that kind of thing lingering in the aprons and all the textiles. Yeah. And then after that, I did a bit of a wet clean on some of the aprons just because I was really focusing on bringing out the bright, vivid colours of the embroidery because they're such an important part of telling the story, and also to kind of show you a bit more of the construction of the aprons because that's a very interesting part of it. There's a lot of quirkiness to it. And when that was done, it was just focused on rehousing it so that you could maintain the, you know, the shape and the form of the aprons for a long time in the future.
Are they still in pretty good condition?
In actually very good condition considering that they've been underneath the floorboards in the dirt for hundreds of years.
So they were stored in the dirt?
They were in these large mounds.
Oh, okay.
Mm. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
So what are you looking for when studying the items, when really going through them? What clues are you hoping they'll provide you into life in a psychiatric ward back in those days?
Well, we kind of looked at it through the life cycle. So we looked at it in stages, things like creation and then repair. So you look at the way that things were created, like things looked like they were done in discrete pieces. The skirt was done separately, then sewed together. The ties would break. They would get, you know, replaced. Even the pattern, it's quite conservative on fabric compared to the regular apron patterns for the day. So you think that seems quite economical for an institution like that. And these all kind of give you clues as to what was the use of the apron and then how these uses kind of became, they evolved as people interacted with them. Mm. And these patients got a hold of them and then started to either, as part of their treatment, do this embroidery, which is quite a accepted form of therapy for the day, or maybe it was just to help express themselves, that kind of thing. And it just helped us to kind of see that the life of these aprons really evolved through very many different stages. And then the deposition phase gets extremely interesting because we see suddenly these aprons in a very different state because they've been cached away when they're actually in great condition.
Yeah.
So it kind of suggests that, you know, they've taken something away from the institution in maybe a subversive manner to try and regain some control, perhaps.
And
that's
interesting.
Yeah.
We were able to compare them to international examples as well.
Really?
Yes, very fascinatingly, in fact. There are a number of embroidered textile items from psychiatric institutions that have been collected from the 19th century. One is called Agnes Richter's Jacket, which is from a collection in Germany, collected by a psychiatrist in the 19th century, and it's very similar to our aprons. It's a little jacket, but it's fully embroidered with phrases and words that related to this woman, Agnes Richter's, life. It said things like, I am very small, and, you know, take me out of here, and things like that in old German script. So a very touching item. Another group of textiles that we looked at came from the UK from a cache that was hidden away by a woman in a chaise longue, which she had been stashing away for many years. And so we were able to put the aprons in an international context, place them in the context of the international literature about activities like concealment, and also, you know, women using embroidery to tell a story about their lives in this kind of really unique way when they couldn't tell it in any other way.